Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 119. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for my co-host David Todd once again on this Tuesday is Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday, Dave. How was your weekend?
How was it? I guess okay. Didn't do too terribly much. We went out to the Clark County Museum on the longest day of the summer at that. It was like 108 or something. They were kind of, so I think we kind of shocked them that we showed up as early as we did too. They said, we told the story about now lived in Vegas for 2 years and been meaning to come out here and see this place and this, that, and the other, and sort of an elderly lady said, so you wait till the hottest and longest day of the year to do it. It's a lot of outdoor, they got a small indoor kind of museum place, and then of course on the outside of it a lot of historical artifacts and old houses they've had transported and set up as kind of sites. And so you spend about half your time inside in the AC and half the time outside, but learned a lot. It was a good little getaway over sort of towards Boulder, Colorado, Nevada, which is on the way of course to the dam and all like that. So a little bit of a drive, but it was worth it. Now my wife wants me to take her on a paddle boat tour of Lake Mead before training camp gets underway. So we'll see if that ends up coming to fruition here.
Well, hopefully you like the water. I guess it's going to happen if she wants it to happen.
Well, I grew up on the water, right. Grew up fishing and boating and all like that. So that's not a big deal. Just the idea of being confined to a boat for two hours with other humans, probably doesn't have me overly exciting, but excited. We'll see though. Let's see. Where do we start here? Let's see. Monday night, the NFL Network revealed players 1 through 10 via a 2-hour special, the annual top 100 players of 2018. Boy, I tell you, they do a good job of keeping you on the hook for 2 hours there. Long story short, the Steelers had two players place in the top five, Le'Veon Bell at fifth overall, and Antonio Brown finished second overall behind the great Tom Brady. I kind of wondered if Antonio, they made it such a big deal, Carson Wentz. I kind of wondered if Antonio might end up third, but he ended up second. I think, Bell was the top running back on the list, edged out Todd Gurley by a few spots there, and then of course Antonio Brown, top wide receiver on the list, edged out Julio Jones there. So no need to have a Steeler Nation uprising when it comes to that. And obviously, there's always been called into question how many players actually vote on this thing, but for the most part, I guess they got the names in the top 10, right? Carson Wentz, I think that's a little bit high for him. But as somebody pointed out to me on Twitter last night, he was on pace for an MVP season until he got injured. But, I mean, how many games did he end up missing? And, look, if I knew all six, if I knew six of the 20 balls that were going to be drawn every Keno game when I walked into the casino, I'd never leave a casino.
Yeah, I thought that 3 was a little high for Wentz, but maybe it's me just having some recency bias of forgetting about how really strong of a season Wentz had. Maybe if Nick Foles would have tanked and Eagles don't win the Super Bowl with him, maybe people would understand that a little bit more. But it was just good to see AB and Bell get that recognition. to Vrabel to be the second best player in the world behind, you know, Tom Brady, in most people's minds, the greatest quarterback of all time, says so much about, you know, where AB's at in his career and where he's going to continue to take it, and then, you know, Bell to get that recognition. So, it's one of those things where if you like the rankings, it's like, wow, great job of the players. They killed it. If you don't like the rankings, you say, wow, what a biased list, and the NFL is probably just making stuff up. But I thought that they were, you know, right in the sweet spots where I think they should be, AB and Bell, and I'm glad to see them get that recognition.
You think both of them will return to the top five a year from now? It's hard to do, isn't it?
It's hard to do, but I think they have as good a shot as anybody. I mean, there's no compelling reason for me to think that they won't, unless something like an injury, obviously unexpected, happens. But again, they're in the prime of their careers, and you know, they're the best at what they do. So, I mean, generally speaking, on the surface, there's no reason for me to say that they won't be right around there.
And in total, the Steelers had 6 players in the top 100 this year. Of course, Roethlisberger, I think, 18. DeCastro at like 44, I think, and then Shazier and Cameron Hayward, something like, it was either 46 and 47 or 47, 48, something along those lines. So, and I think they showed a quick snippet last night that Marquise Pouncey, I think he finished, what did I write, 108th overall. He just missed the top 100 there. So we're done with that for a year, but I think the biggest plus for staying up and watching that entire thing was the post 100 wrap up show and all. And they had, of course, Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown as guests on that show, and an interview with Le'Veon Bell. And, you know, some of the things that he said during that interview, I think, are obviously, well, I posted about one of them last night, and I'm going to post about another one. We're probably going to talk about it here in just a minute. Le'Veon Bell, Michael Irvin put Le'Veon Bell on the spot, you know, about his contract and all. And Bell said, "We're working on it," which you would expect him to say. And then he said, "We're a lot closer than we were last year at this time, and that's what I'm happy about. But none of that matters if we don't get it done. Hopefully, we'll try to get something done, and that's what I'm looking forward to. I got confidence we'll get it done, so I want to do it."
I mean, you can just copy and paste what he said last year to this year. I mean, it all sounds good, and I believe they probably are closer. Just naturally, the more you work at it, the closer you're going to be, or at least understand the other side. But, you know, this isn't horseshoes and hand grenades over here. Closeness doesn't cut it.
Right, and I'm trying to remember if he – I'll have to go back on the blog and all like that and search and see if there was an exact quote of him saying – showing the confidence this close out, you know, what is it, a little less than 3 weeks. Now, he probably did. Look, I mean, that's the right thing to say anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, keep your optimism up, your outward optimism up, sort of put it back on the club as much as you can. He's been a little more quiet, I guess, so to speak, when it comes to his contract as of late. But obviously, you know, he hasn't been around OTAs or hasn't had a microphone put in his face either, you know, over the last couple weeks as well. So, hey, we're going to get our answer here very, very, very soon, within within 3 weeks. Like I said, I don't expect anything to happen prior to the July 4th date here. It just doesn't make sense. And as we've said all along, deadlines usually spur action. We had Mike Tomlin talk right after the mandatory mini camp wrapped up in a call with Steelers Nation United, saying that, you know, they still have negotiations yet to take place. So, you know, we'll see what ends up happening here with Le'Veon Bell. One interesting thing that he did say, kind of a add-on to, well, maybe he's not as confident. He was asked by Irvin, in so many words, you know, what did he learn last year about, you know, missing training camp and all the off-season practices? What did he learn from last year that can maybe help prevent sort of the slow start that the running game had during the 2017 regular season? He says, yeah, you know, Regardless, that's what I want to do. I don't want to have – well, no, hold on. I'm on the wrong quote here. He says, I think just getting back in the groove with the offense. When you're not there in camp, mini camp, OTAs, and things like that, they find different rhythms with different backs that's in there or whatever player they put in the spot that I would be in. So I got to obviously find a way to get back quicker, maybe taking Ben Roethlisberger to the side and literally just me and him one-on-one, him throwing me the ball, getting in sync with my O lineman. That's usually what comes quickest, to be honest, is me getting in sync with my O-line rather than me running routes with Ben. It's a lot of timing and things like that. So I think for me, that was the biggest thing was my timing with Ben and us getting together on the same page. So he makes it sound like it wasn't a big deal when it came to getting the timing or, you know, getting in sync with his offensive lineman, that it was more of a challenge to get on the same page with Ben Roethlisberger, I guess, in the passing game.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of what the exact issue is, whether it's the O-line or Ben or, you know, football conditioning, whatever, I guess the one silver lining is if a deal doesn't get done and we're in a repeat of what happened last year is that, you know, Bell and this team's not going to be ignorant of the problem. They're going to realize the challenges they faced last year and hopefully, you know, you're not going to avoid it. You're still going to have those timing and rhythm and conditioning issues. You're unavoidable, but hopefully the Steelers can take some steps, and like Bell's talking about, to try to mitigate that and get out of the gate a little bit quicker, because last year it was tough in the early going.
He was asked an interesting question by Kurt Warner, talking about the change in offensive coordinators from Todd Haley to Randy Feitner and all, and he was asked, does he see his, you know, if he sees his touches going up, going down, do you see things being similar because of one of his greatest assets being his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield? And he says, yeah, I think a lot of touches will kind of be the same. I don't think he doesn't think he'll see less. I don't think I necessarily see more. I think Randy will find a different ways to get to get him open. I don't have these quotes transcribed yet, so I'm going off of a rough piece here. Give him more touches in open space. Don't allow him or allow him to use his moves and his strength in space more so against DBs and things like that, as opposed to going against linebackers and running between the tackles. But in the end, he says he doesn't think his touches that, you know, he might have a little more catches, a little less carries, but that all of his touches will be there.
I mean, it's hard to have more carries than last year, 321 carries to lead the league. So hopefully that number comes down to somewhere around 300. I don't know how he's going to have more catches. I mean, he had, 85 last year. I mean, to go much higher than that, it's going to be a little difficult to do. But, hey, I mean, it's not impossible. But yeah, I mean, again, regardless, if Bell is on the tag, that means it's his last year. So you just run the wheels off of him because – why not? It's not going to be your problem to deal with 2019 and beyond. And if you do get a long-term deal, well, then he's got to play to that standard and play to that contract. So you're going to run him just as hard. So, you know, he's going to be, again, a 90% snap kind of guy. And that's one of the things that makes him so valuable is that he is basically the only guy. I mean, maybe Todd Gurley, maybe Zeke at some point, but one of the only guys in the league that can play 90% of the time and play at an extremely high level snap to snap.
It will be interesting to see if they're able to get him off the field a little bit, you know.
Do you want that, or do you think it just might happen?
I mean, obviously, I want the best player out there, you know, and he's that. But on the same token, how much can I, you know, 400 touches? Wow, we see backs tend to break down when they go over that 350 mark a couple of seasons in a row. It'd just be interesting to see if there's unique situations where they're able to get him, you know, a series off here and there, you know?
Yeah, well, I think he would generally get a series off a game. I mean, that's basically what happened last year. I mean, 90% does mean you're missing, you know, 1 to 2 a game.
Right, right. And, you know, the problem is with that is do you have someone in there that can – you know, help the offense function, You know, we talked about it time and time again. You know, the two seemingly guys right now are really, you could add Ridley into that probably as well, too. I guess Toussaint, for all practical purposes, we don't know how things are going to shake out injury-wise, of course. I mean, Toussaint, if there's a plus with Toussaint right now, it's just pass protection, I think, one of his stronger suits. Do we know enough about Ridley in that area right now?
As a Steeler, probably not. I'd have to go back and look at, you know, Patriots and Jets tape, but yeah, I don't have a good idea on it as a Steeler.
Connor, we all remember what happened in that game against Jacksonville. Had he passed the litmus test in week 5 or whenever that was, when it came to that area of his game, he might have seen a few more snaps last year. And you and I have had the conversation since Jalen Samuels has been drafted, wondering how he's going to be in pass protection.
I mean, I think there's going to be enough confidence to, you know, be able to give Bell that one or two series or very, you know, niche situational football to bring somebody else in. I think they were high on Samuels. Tomlin's talked up James Conner. I expect Conner to be a lot better, to be in better shape. You know, and as much as we harp on the Jacksonville game and stuff like that, you know, hopefully that's in the past. There'll be enough there to get Bell off the same as last year. Is it going to be more than that? I doubt it, though.
It sure would be nice to have him in training camp, you know, even though he's not going to touch the ball that much, you know, maybe to get away from that slowish type of start. Anything that you can do, you know, to avoid that would be a positive. But obviously, if he doesn't have a contract signed by July 16th, in so many words, last night, he reiterated what we've known for quite a while, and that he's not going to be around until week 1 if he doesn't have a contract signed by July 16th.
But you still think it's going to get done?
I obviously don't have any links to how negotiations are going or anything like that. I've just been reading in between the lines and this whole time in my gut and all like that. My gut still wants me to believe that they're going to get something done.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. Do you think, if you had to guess, if they get a deal done, and I know we're looking at, I'm asking this in a broad sense, but what would be the average yearly value in a contract if something gets done?
It's going to be right up there, I think. I mean, will it be 14.5? Will it be 15? Will it be 13, 13.5? I would expect it to be, you know, around that number, you know. Would he really take, you know, I think he wants to exceed the Agers. I would be surprised if he doesn't exceed what the highest has been to date for a long-term deal.
Just Peterson in 2012, 2010.
Right, 12 point whatever, you know.
Oh, well, he'll definitely get – I mean, the Steelers would offer like 13 last year, so he's already above that. Right, no problem.
We think that's what they – I mean
– yeah, reported.
You know, there's – sometimes you wonder because, you know, sides don't come out – you know, does a side not questioning it make it true, you know, make reports true, you know, we'll never know.
Bell told ESPN that he's not going to take less than the franchise tag, which is 14.5. So we know that's the floor, which is above AP.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, it's hard to put a number on this. We've seen backs in the past take a little less than the franchise tag. Ray Rice, Matt Forte, you know?
Yeah, but Bell's not doing that. He's made that abundantly clear.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I think if it gets done, it'll be like $15 million per year.
Yeah, and, you know, that's kind of, you know, my motto has been all along that, you know, if you put the tag on the player, you tell him that he's worth that. And generally, you don't see long-term deals come in on players on tags under the tag amount. But then again, you did have situations with, I think, Ray Rice and Matt Forte. And the question is, because it's the position that we're talking about with running backs. Any other position, you know, there's generally no question when it comes to that. But for some reason, when you get to the running back position, you know, the fungibility of the position, all that goes along with it, that's when it calls into question the average yearly value related to the tag.
Yeah, if he was a wide receiver or a corner, this would have been done, you know, at least a year ago. But that's the issue of longevity at the position. You know, the shelf life of running back is shorter than most other positions, and so that's why the market values tanked so much. And with teams doing committee stuff, like, you really can't do a receiver by committee, you can't do a corner by committee, you know, running back by committee, you can make it work. So those are all the things working against Bell. So I'm still very much pessimistic that a deal will get done, but I think if it does get done, you know, we know that Bell's bottom dollars 14 and a half per year, and I think he doesn't want to take, you know, his absolute floor. So I think they'll have to come up a little bit, and I think if it gets done, it'd be 15 per year. And again, if the reports were true last year and the Steelers were offering somewhere around 13, you know, a little above 13 last year, I think it's going to be a tall task to think that they're going to go to even 14 and a half, much less 15 million per year.
Do you think it's hit him yet that if he doesn't get, do you think he fully understands the scope of it if he doesn't get a deal done by July 16th that he's going to be playing his final year in Pittsburgh?
That's a good question.
And do you think that Matt, I mean, I think that matters to him, but I mean, look, color of the uniform doesn't pay the bills.
Right. No, I think you said it well. I mean, I think it matters to him. Let me address that first. I mean, I believe that when he says he wants to remain a Steeler, I believe that's sincere. He does want to stay in Pittsburgh. Who wants to leave, you know, a city that's been successful and a place that, you know, you started to build your life with? But to the idea of is that going to be enough? Does he fully realize that? I'm not entirely sure. You know, I think his bottom line is he just wants to get paid what he views as fair. And if Pittsburgh won't do it, if he bets on himself and believes he'll have the season he's capable of having, he'll easily get his asking price and probably then some on the open market. So I think that's the driving factor with him.
All right. Stay tuned.
Lisa, I mean, we're coming up with a deadline pretty quick, though. So I'm happy to get, you know, a resolution kind of on the horizon.
Yeah, everybody's probably done tired talking about it. You know, you're either in one corner or you're in the other at this point by now.
I think you're in a corner by yourself, Dave.
Yeah. There's not a lot of people. I don't think there's a lot of people with the kind. Look, I'm not going to be shocked if it doesn't get done, you sure. know. I just a gut feeling on with his, you know, I don't know how much his mom being a Steelers fan plays into it and this, that, and the other. I just, you know, something's been telling me for quite a while that they'll get it done. So we'll know for sure, but, you know, in 3 weeks. But like I've said all along, I'll be very unsurprised, if it doesn't. So, three more weeks, less than 3 more weeks, and you know, I told someone asked me in a radio interview the other day, you know, what am I expecting, you know, off season stuff and news and having to write about that. I said the only thing I you know, I want to write about with the Steelers off the field in the next several weeks before training camp gets underway is writing about Bell signing a long term extension, and that's it. The rest of it seems to be pretty quiet right now off the field, so let's hope that continues there. I didn't. Did you see did you see the interview with Antonio Brown?
On NFL Network? No,
yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah, I haven't. I haven't gotten that far. I got busy typing up what Le'Veon Bell had to say and all like that. All right, that ought to put that segment to bed. So gave us something to talk about. 15 minutes, about 20 minutes, about there. All right, where to from here?
I know we touched on this, I think, last podcast, but you had the official write-up. We can delve into it a little bit more. You had your camp preview, 6 buzzworthy offensive players, Dave. Who should we be looking out for?
And I'm going to be doing the defensive one either today or tomorrow as well, and we kind of hit on this the other day. And immediately somebody in the comments wrote, "I don't see the buzz." Well, look, the whole kind of scope of me picking out these guys are guys that aren't guaranteed to make the roster and really aren't guaranteed to make the practice squad at this point. I mean, we all know the names of the guys we think that are going to, you know, the 30 or whatever that we think are going to are locks to make the roster. But what about the guys that since, you know, the draft took place and free agency and all like that, you know, the guys that have a good chance, the guys that you know, we're probably going to be talking quite a bit about when you get to, you know, Latrobe in 4 weeks or so. And Marcus Tucker, I think because of all the buzz that's already been generated about him so far this offseason, I think he has to lead the list when it comes to kind of buzzworthy offensive players. Because at this point, to me, it's going to be disappointing if we're getting to the end of preseason and we're not talking about him legitimately having a shot at the 53.
Yeah, and I think that he will. You know, will he make it? It's certainly far from a guarantee. We've talked about the Eli Rogers situation and how much tougher Tucker's path is going to be if Eli Rogers is brought back, which I'm still under the assumption that he will be. But I expect Tucker to at least have a strong preseason and to make that a tough decision one way or the other for Pittsburgh.
And he should have some kind of meaningful playing time in middle of games, you would think, preseason games this year.
Yeah, I mean, he should play, and the versatility he's going to have and continue to add to is going to help him a lot. He came into the Steelers as more of an outside guy, and I think they're playing him more in the slot this year from the stuff I've read. So, you know, he'll have an ample opportunity because there's going to be an injury somewhere or someone's going to get rested for a game, and, you know, Tucker's going to see some snaps, maybe even occasional snaps with the first team unit. And so, you know, he'll be one of the top probably three guys on offense and snaps in the preseason.
Very good. Patrick Morris, next on my list, the undrafted free agent out of TCU, center slash guard. I've yet to, I hope within the next week or two to really start, you know, find some of his, drill down more into his tape and all. But I think the thing that I wonder most about Patrick Morris is had he not missed so many games last season because of injuries, would he have been a fifth through seventh round pick?
I think he was a draftable talent. I think it's just tough because you do have so many interior linemen and, you know, you're not able to draft them all. So I think it's certainly possible he could have been drafted had there been more tape and some more experience. I think you're right about that. But I think the Steelers got somebody that was definitely worthy of a late-round draft pick in terms of his work ethic and, again, some really rare athleticism for a guy of his size and his position.
And I think I'm going to be most interested to hear from you, and once we get into the preseason games, is where he sees most of his playing time. You know, they have supposedly Matt Filer. They've been working at center. We would expect to see Matt Filer enter the game after B.J. Finney at some point. You know, will he be the next guy up? Will Patrick Morris beat him into the game at center? Will Patrick Morris mostly be used at left guard, where I think when he wasn't playing at center at TCU, I think most of his snaps may have came at left guard. So I think that's the biggest thing with him is where is he going to see the bulk of his snaps at?
Yeah, I'm guessing. Well, that's a good question. I forget what I had in my offensive line mock-up a couple weeks ago. I mean, I think Finney's going to be second team center. So if Morris is staying at center, that's going to be third team. You know, I think Filer's going to be second team right guard. So who's going to be your left guard? So I guess this is a question of how you want to draw it up. But, you know, he can play either spot.
If you had to bet in the first preseason game, who plays center first, Patrick Morris or Matt Filer?
I'm going to say Morris. I'm not sure how much we're going to see a Filer at center. I mean, maybe some, but I think that's kind of more of a Hubbard, really, in case of emergency situation, just because, you know, they're taking the long view with this, and, you know, they know Filer's making this team at this point, and he's going to be active on game days. Patrick Morris is a coin flip, so they want someone to be that center capable in case, you know, some catastrophe happens along the offensive line in game. I think that's kind of what the vision is more than it is a serious look at center during the preseason or even camp.
From what you know about Morris right now, will you be surprised if he does not make the practice squad?
Well, it's hard to quantify any of this, you know, how good a player's odds are. I like to just kind of put it in the camp of I think he has the talent to make the practice squad. So I guess I'd be mildly surprised. But once you get in the camp, I mean, you never know what happens. So I don't try to get into camp with too high of an expectation on a guy who hasn't taken a snap before. But I believe he has the talent and ability to make the practice squad, yes.
Next on my list, number three out of six, probably a surprising to some folks, but I've talked a little bit about him recently, Jake Rogers. You know, this is Jake Rogers that bounced on and off the practice squad last season. The Steelers made sure to quickly add him back to their offseason roster back in May after the Houston Texans waived him. There's something there that they like about him, and now the loss of Gerald Hawkins, is there going to be a ninth offensive lineman kept on the original 53 this year? If so, is that player going to be more tackle, more interior? And does Jake have a shot at making that spot? And especially now with Bryce, who is Bryce Harris, being signed fairly recently as well, too. I'm not predicting anything for Jake. I just think he is a guy that is buzzworthy that bears watching once the team gets to Latrobe.
It's possible. I'm not feeling that it's likely. You know, I think he's got to have a really, really strong camp to make this push. He's a guy that clearly has to play his way onto the roster, because I think this team's going to be comfortable with keeping eight even after losing Hawkins for the season. So, hopefully he gets second team work, because he was stuck third team last year and the guy just did not get any reps, even in camp. In a practice, it was pretty tough, and in game, it was, you know, a series at best. If you were able to get any sort of snaps, you know, you were grateful for it. So hopefully he's on in the second team. He probably will, because you're going to have Harris on one side. Well, I'm trying to think how that's going to go. Maybe not, because you're going to have a core four, probably left tackle, and then that right tackle spot's going to be either probably Harris or Rogers. So hopefully Rogers can take that spot, otherwise he's going to be in trouble. But like I said, I think he could make it, but I think he's got to have the camp of his life to do it.
Rogers is a guy that could potentially fit in all three categories. He could potentially make the 53. I'm not sure what his practice squad eligibility is at this point.
I think he's still eligible.
Let's assume he has eligibility. He could potentially make the practice squad, or he could potentially be out of town
and just be on that yo-yo like he was last year. That's like a fourth possibility.
Right. So, you know, I think that's what kind of makes him intriguing, because he is a guy that, you know, potentially fits in all three of those categories there. So I have a feeling we'll find out, real soon by the first, preseason game of maybe what they really think about him and if he's up to the task.
The only draft pick on the list, though. I mean, this was a guy that was a seventh round pick, like you wrote yesterday. So he was viewed as a draftable talent.
Right, but not a draft pick by the Steelers. I wanted to make sure that I'm not including any Steelers draft picks, on this list here. Another offensive lineman, R.J. Prince. Prince out of North Carolina, undrafted free agent. Kind of surprising that he didn't sign a deal right away with the team, and had to rely on a mini camp tryout invite. Of course, him and Damone Patterson were the two players that impressed enough during that three-day rookie mini camp to warrant getting signed to the offseason roster. You know, I look at R.J. Prince and some of his college work and potential, and I can't help but throwing out the name Ramon Foster. You know.
Yeah, you know, he's got the size. They're big guys. They're tough to get around. I think Prince had good feet, played with some good power. Now, some of the technique stuff they taught at UNC is different than what Munchak teaches, and that's going to be natural for most guys, but just some of the obvious stuff like how you pull. UNC used a skip pull. Steelers use a square pull. So just stuff like that's going to have to change. I hope they play him at guard. It kind of looks at him a tackle in rookie minicamp, and he was mainly an interior guy at North Carolina. He's a bigger guy. I think he's like 6'6", so there's a leverage issue, but I don't think he's going to have enough of the lateral mobility to play tackle. I think he wants to stay home at guard and kind of use that size to his advantage in pass protection in the run game. So hopefully he's getting work at guard. If he does, I think he can have a good camp.
All right. And the thing with him is he did actually play some how much interior did he play versus tackle at North Carolina?
From what I understand, he played mostly as a guard at North Carolina, not much at tackle.
And with Ramon Foster, when he came out of Tennessee, he mostly played tackle, right tackle.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So, that's a little bit of difference in there. But, look, I mean, I can remember back when Ramon Foster, Ramon Foster was that guy. He doesn't have a shot and all like that. And lo and behold, he's there when the dust settled during his, 2009? I think right around there, his first season there. Okay, the last two guys on the list I don't think have a shot. One of them I know doesn't have a shot in Christian Scotland Williamson, the tight end, the international pathway player, the former rugby player, but he's going to be interesting to watch nonetheless. And I think it's going to be buzzworthy from the fact of you got a 6'9" former rugby player attempting to make it in the NFL as a tight end. And because of some of the kind of the marquee hits we've seen of his when he played rugby, just in general, he should be a fun guy to monitor.
I think he'll have one or two amazing plays in camp or the preseason, and he'll have like 10 that are just terrible. And that's okay. That's kind of what your expectation is. It's just about showing, is there enough of a flash and the occasional spark and of course the football IQ and the work ethic to get better. But do you see, like, you know, if this guy takes a whole year on the practice squad, is that, you know, exempt spot, can he really become something in 2019? So it's not about seeing perfection or even really consistency. It's just about seeing the potential and the flash here and there that maybe this guy can be something with a lot of seasoning.
Kind of the mentality he has. I look forward to watching him run up and down the field on special teams.
Yeah, no, I did not even think about special teams. That could be really an interesting calling card for him. You don't see many tight ends that could cover super well.
And the other guy I have on this list, it's going to be you talk about special teams and shots at making a roster. It definitely applies to him, and that's Quadre Henderson. He's a local player coming out of Pitt and all like that, and I know a lot of people probably know a lot more about him because of that. He did have some nice kickoff returns and all at Pitt, but make no mistake about it, he's got to have a very Stephon Logan like preseason, you know, to get himself on the roster. And I realize that there, you know, you can carve out with the 53, you can make the numbers work where they keep, you know, a guy that you know, return capable only type of player. But even so, you know, he's really going to have to he's going to have to really do something early on in preseason and keep that up and really make himself uncuttable the way Stephon Logan did in, what was it, 2009.
Yep, you said it well, Dave. You know, I think I've shortchanged Henderson a little bit. There is definitely a chance to make it because he does have a clear role and a clear path as a return guy. And like I wrote about recently for Steelers Depot, that I believe with the NFL kickoff rule changes, they're kind of treating kickoffs more like a punt. And I think that's going to help Henderson's skill set and because they usually don't like super small guys to do kicks in Pittsburgh. They like guys a little bit bigger, a little bit tougher, but with the rule change, that could kind of shift their philosophy. So you said it well, though. I mean, he's got to have a stellar, you know, preseason. It's hard to even do it in camp and practice as a special teamer because, I mean, you're just showing technique and basic stuff. You're not obviously making plays in camp practices, so you have to take advantage in the preseason where your opportunities are going to be limited and, you know, a screw-up or designed by the opponent could totally rob you entirely. But you're right. If he has a Logan-type preseason, who knows what could happen. There's a spot there, and hopefully he gets the opportunity.
All right. Did anybody I leave off that maybe should qualify as a buzzworthy offensive player not drafted by the Steelers?
I forget who all I talked about on the last podcast. I think you hit on the big names, though. I mean, you could throw up Patterson as well. I think the stories there are interesting. I think a couple of other wide receivers they brought in on future deals are interesting names. Tevin Jones, Trey Griffey. But at this point, you know, we're talking about the same names every camp's talking about. So, again, I don't go in with too much of an expectation. You know, it's a blank slate for most of these guys. And, you know, who knows what could happen.
All right, the supplemental draft is coming. The supplemental draft is coming. The supplemental draft is coming.
All right, Paul Revere.
The annual supplemental draft will take place, I think, the first or second week of July. There's three guys, I think, this year that are eligible for it. Mississippi State safety Brandon Bryant, Virginia Tech cornerback Adonis Alexander, and Western Michigan cornerback Sam Bill. Bryant held his makeshift pro day, if you will, yesterday. The Steelers reportedly had somebody present for that. I think, what was it, 11 or 14 teams showed up for that and all. This is a guy that, because of, I think, academic reasons, wasn't going to be eligible for his senior 2018 season at Mississippi State. So he said, the heck with it, I'm going to go ahead and enter the supplemental draft. Quick as a Devil. I haven't went way into his film and all like that, but he registered 157 total tackles in his three previous seasons at Mississippi State. Had five interceptions. I believe three of those maybe came in. I think three of those came during his first year, first of 3 years. If not, I know it was, I think he went 3-1-1 in the interceptions over the course of the last 3 years. That being said, I think he ran good. I think he had some decent measurables from what I understand, according to Gil Brandt, a tweet by him on Monday. But with that said, I'm not expecting Brandon Bryant to be drafted.
I don't know. It seems like, and I don't know these guys too well. I'm not going to look at any of them too closely unless Pittsburgh were to select them in the supplemental draft. It sounds like it's a pretty talented group of guys. It'd be as good as it's been since, what, the Pryor and Josh Gordon, a supplemental pick? I forget. But good in a while. And there's actually a fourth guy, an Oregon linebacker, that just got made eligible. I forget his name, but so there's another name to be thrown into the mix. So, I mean, I think maybe one of these guys will be taken. You mentioned Gil Brandt. He had a tweet yesterday about Brandon Bryant's pro day time. 4.45 40, 4.23 short shuttle, 7.26 three cone, 34-inch vert, 10.3 in the broad, did not bench, came in 5.11, 207. So for a guy in a situation where you don't get the training that, you know, regular draft pick, a potential draft pick does, those are some impressive numbers. So, you know, obviously you'd be surprised if Steelers were to take him, just like any team would be surprised because it's such a dart throw. But, you know, I guess we'll see.
I think the most intriguing guy on the list, the guy with the best chance of being drafted, and really I think a lot of people will be surprised if he's not drafted in a supplemental draft, is Sam Beal, the Western Michigan cornerback. I've seen people say maybe third round, as high as third round. Yo, we'll see. But he seems to be the most intriguing of the bunch. With that said, and someone asked yesterday on Twitter to explain how the supplemental draft works. You know, it's basically, you know, a silent bid, if you will. Teams, you know, it goes by the draft order and all, and teams put in whether or not they're willing to take a guy in whatever round, and that's why the whole thing lasts like 5 minutes. But if a team, let's say a team decides to draft a player in a supplemental draft in the third round, well, then they have to give up their third round draft pick or corresponding pick in 2019 to be able to get that player. So that's a lot to give up. You better be sure if you're going to spend, you know, you've got to treat this as if, you know, you're getting this kid a year early and at whatever price, because it's going to cost you a matching pick in next year's draft. And on top of that, the rookie salary pool comes into play just as if he would have been drafted this year. So, you know, if you're going to spend, let's say, a third, fourth, fifth round pick on a player in this year's supplemental draft, then are you going to immediately cut him? No. The answer is no.
Nope.
So these players have to have a guy, let's take, you know, Bill, I think, is going to be the best example here. Because obviously if you drafted a guy like, you know, Alexander or the, you know, Bryant or whatnot, you know, and got him in the seventh round, obviously here's the bad thing about it, too, is you don't have long to work with these guys either. They're already behind the eight ball because of missing the offseason practices. Their heads are going to be spinning when they enter in training camp and having to play catch up. It's just such a tall task. So if you're going to spend a supplemental draft pick on one of these kids, you have to do it knowing that, you know, these kids are going to stick on your 53-man roster initially, I would think.
Yeah, definitely. You're spending, you know, that kind of pick, especially if it's going to be third. I don't think it's going to be a third. Usually there's a little bit of a hype that swells up, and in reality is that, you know, if these guys are going to be taken, it's going to be maybe a fifth or a sixth round situation. You know, it just doesn't happen because, you know, obviously these guys usually have some sort of concern coming out. There's a reason why they're in the supplemental draft, so some sort of reason why you're not eligible, potential off-the-field problem, you know, could you know, make it difficult to learn enough about these guys in a short amount of time to feel comfortable with taking them. You know, the realization that, you know, obviously in the supplemental draft, you're drafting a pool of three or four players, and with your regular draft pick, you're drafting from a pool of, you know, 80 guys on your board. So, you know, do you want to use that pick on a on such a small group, or do you want to wait till the draft when you have a whole board to look at and to really find a guy that you like? So the talent just has to be at a really high level to justify all the kind of costs and concerns with using a supplemental pick. But you're right. I think that sounds like, and again, I don't know these guys too super well, but it sounds like the talent in this class is as strong as it's been in at least the last 5 years or so. And so I think someone's going to get taken.
I think someone will get taken. I think it'll be Bill. I don't think the other three will get drafted, but those guys should end up signing somewhere, right, as undrafted free agents.
Yeah, right, because that's how it works, right? As soon as the draft's over, if they're not taken, they're free to sign anywhere like a UDFA, correct?
Right, right. So, you know, obviously I don't expect the Steelers to partake in this again.
Yeah, me neither.
Okay, where to from now?
I know we're getting into the really boring part of the offseason with the lists, the dreaded word lists, but, you know, I just thought it was really ridiculous, and David Carr's for NFL.com late last week did his top 10 quarterbacks, and it's his list, and he wants to be different, and hey, I'm all for people being a little different and against the grain, but no Ben Roethlisberger in the top 10, behind Jimmy Garoppolo. I think, what, Derek Carr was ranked fourth, which I didn't realize when I first wrote that, but Carr says why Ben's off the list. He says, yes, he's a future Hall of Famer, and there's no doubt he can still help the Steelers, but he's got the most talented skill players in the league on his unit, and that pair, A.B. and Le'Veon Bell, are making him look great 14 seasons in. I don't think Big Ben could win a ton of games without them at this stage in his career. These people get paid, Dave. It hurts me.
Yeah, and they're paid to come up with these lists and all as well too, especially during this time of year. Look, I'm if people listen to this show, I'm bullish on Jimmy Garoppolo. I really am. But I mean, let's see it for a full season.
He's got 7 career starts, 12 touchdowns, and you're saying he's already better than Ben? Okay.
Yeah, I'm not saying that, but
no, I know that's what he said.
Yeah, but Come talk to me this time next year.
Yeah.
You know?
And if you want to leave Ben off, I mean, I guess you can, but give me a better reason than his supporting cast. You can talk about the inconsistencies and some of the turnovers and loss of mobility. At least give me something that, you know, a quarterback would recognize rather than just this lazy, you know, just fan analysis. I've always got some talent. Like, could you be any lazier with your thought process? You're David Carr. You're a quarterback. You weren't a very good one, but you know, you know more than I do about the position. You give me some real analysis for your reason, but you don't even get that. So, I mean, that's really, really a bad look.
Top 10 quarterbacks in the league. I mean, obviously list probably starts with Tom Brady. You know, I think Ben obviously belongs in the top 10. Wentz, Flacco's not in there.
No, he's nowhere close. Well, you have your usual guys, Aaron Rodgers and
Rodgers, Breeze.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson obviously in that bunch? I think.
I think Stafford's probably top 10, maybe 9
yes,
or 10.
Yes, Stafford. Boy, he can make those whole shot throws, can he? Golly, I was going back watching some of that Detroit game the other day, and of course the Steelers made it a little bit easier on him. But boy, talk about somebody can hit that whole shot. It's Matthew Stafford. Geez, who else? I mean, the usual suspects. Who's there every year? You know.
Yeah, Matt Ryan, Cam Newton. You know, I mean, there's a ton of names, and there's a good debate to be had about it. But to leave Ben out of the top 10 is a tough pill to swallow, and I'm being generous when I say that, but then to justify that by saying he's got some great talent. All these guys have great talent. I mean, you could argue that for most of these quarterbacks. So just ridiculous and disappointing that someone that gets paid and on such a big platform like NFL.com just to write the laziest, hackiest stuff possible. It's just frustrating.
What do you think about the kind of the early buzz coming out of Baltimore and Lamar Jackson and how he might be used?
Well, I haven't heard too much. I guess I haven't paid too much attention. I know they're impressed with Jackson. I know there's talk about some sort of package for him that they're going to use. All I know is the clock's ticking for Joe Flacco, and he's going to be gone sooner rather than later. I'm pretty confident 2018 is going to be his last year as a Raven. Jackson's going to be the future. So, you know, whether it's sometime this year where change happens, if the team goes sideways, like it's kind of maybe thought to happen, or definitely by the start of 2019, Jackson's going to be the guy.
You know, I think some of the best analysis when it comes to I wouldn't say best, but that caught my ear, if you will, talking about how they might have packages where they put both Flacco and Lamar Jackson on the field at the same time. Who was the defensive player they had up there talking about it the other day on NFL? I forget who it was, but he said, look, if you want to put two quarterbacks out there, then that you're going to be playing, you know, 9 on RR 11, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you really want to try that a couple of times, go ahead. And, you know, because we're going to have the advantage more times than not. So
I just think the sooner they get Jackson on the field and Flacco off of it, the better chance of success short and long term the Ravens are going to have. And so as a Steeler fan, I'll keep Flacco out there. You know, keep it out there the whole season. That's cool with me. But Jackson's going to be the key, not Flacco.
Would you use Lamar Jackson in certain packages, not with Flacco on the field?
So as a true quarterback?
Right.
Yeah, I definitely would. I'd probably be a little more shy of using him in this package with Flacco on the field, where I assume Jackson's doing something as a runner or receiver or something funky. I want him to be focused on quarterback. He was drafted in the first round. This isn't a Isaiah Stonbach, a late round undrafted guy where you're just kind of, you know, just trying to get whatever you can out of him. This is your franchise quarterback, you know, heir to the throne. So I want him focusing on quarterback, and sure, I mean, I want to get him on the field year one, and you can do some sub-package stuff, or some package stuff, I should say. Yeah, I'm all for it.
If the Ravens miss the playoffs this year, is that it for Harbaugh?
I know he was on the hot seat this past year. I know they're doing some ownership changes, and Newsom's kind of wrapping things up. My guess, and it's just a guess, I'm certainly not as clued in as other, you know, people that follow the Ravens, I think Harbaugh will get one more year in 2019 with Lamar Jackson, a quarterback, to see what was the real issue. Was it Harbaugh or was it Flacco? Because we're assuming Flacco's kind of declined, and I think you give Harbaugh the benefit of the doubt for that extra season.
You wrote again, or I shouldn't say again, but you wrote about John Simon. You and I have talked about him, I think, in previous podcasts, about him possibly being the name to watch for the Steelers when it comes to guys added down the road closer to the start of the regular season. There's no doubt that Simon could potentially be cut. I think there was an article even yesterday or day before in one of the local papers there talking about how he's, you know, trying to make the switch back, you know, back to kind of defensive end after playing, you know, 3-4 outside linebacker spot really all of his career. And Simon thinks, look, it's all still football and all like that, and how he played, you know, kind of a similar position when he was at Ohio State and all. But when push comes to shove, it's not going to be surprising to see Simon as a guy, you know, on the outs when the dust clears there right near the start of the season, whether it be trade or whether it be something else. And, you know, if you wanted to really circle a guy that the Steelers could be potentially interested in come closer to the start of the season, it could be him.
You're right, and they tend to make some sort of move. You know, they're adding somebody, whether that is as a free agent or a trade. They've been pretty active in camp. Outside linebacker is an obvious issue in terms of depth behind, you know, Chicken or behind Bud Dupree and T.J. Watt. And I wrote about John Simon not because it was just my own idea out of nowhere. It was a Steelers' interest in him out of Ohio State back in, what, 2013, where they brought him in for a pre-draft visit. They brought in Vince Williams the same day as they brought in John Simon. They drafted Vince Williams. We know how that turned out. And so we've seen the Steelers, you know, look at their list of guys that they like coming out of the draft. You know, when they signed Ladarius Green a couple of years ago, that was the guy they brought him in for a pre-draft visit. So there's a pretty good track record of guys they've looked at coming out of the draft that they didn't get, and the kind of circle back to him they take a look at. So he's not going to cure all their problems, but I think he's going to be better than Chick, a stronger version of Chick, who can play both outside linebacker spots, has experience on twists, can play some inside, you know, in some sub-packet stuff and some different formations. So I think it'd just be a solid backup, not someone that is going to be a 10-sack kind of guy. He is what he is at this point, but I think, you know, both in terms of what Steelers have done in their history and kind of what Simon's game is, I think it would make a lot of sense.
When you recently went back through some of the Chickalo tape from last year, what did you not like? What stuck out the most that bothered you?
Almost everything. I watched his pass rushers. I didn't watch his run game. He's a guy that tries to win in a lot of ways. He has some good hand use. You know, he has a lot of moves in his tool belt, and you see it in camp a good bit where he wins in a variety of ways. But he lacks the bend and the flexibility to turn the corner. I don't see the violence and the physicality in his hands and his punch that you would expect from a bigger guy and a guy that you think could convert speed to power. I just don't see it a whole lot. He likes that kind of long arm that tries to, you know, either convert to a speed rush or try to rip. And again, the bend isn't quite there, and there's probably too much wasted movement in trying to set those moves up. So he can get too tall on his inside counters, and he opens up his chest, and it's just hard to disengage. So I just want to see him play with more physicality and more violence in his hands, because he's not going to be a bendy guy. He's not going to be a guy that wins the edge with a great burst or ability to bend the corner like Von Miller. So there's versatility and there's effort and there's a plan. I think Chicolo has all that, but I just don't see the physical traits that really shine through that makes him an effective pass rusher.
Will you be disappointed if they don't add from the outside at outside linebacker before the start of the season?
The start of the regular season?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think you want to go into camp and see what you have in the young guys. I don't want them to make any moves before training camp. I want to at least evaluate the 90 that you have. So Keon Adams, Adeniyi from Toledo, the undrafted rookie, Farrington Huguenin, Darnell Leslie, I think, is in camp. So, I mean, there's names you want to at least look at and just kind of get an evaluation of. And if you're not impressed by them after, the first couple of preseason games in camp, then yeah, I think you do want to make a move. So I don't want to say I will or won't be disappointed. I'll be disappointed if they don't make a move, if those guys don't play at a super high level and they don't add anybody, because I think you do want to add another guy in that case. But I'll reserve judgment, first of all.
Boy, that guy, it sure would be interesting if Simon can be the guy. Look, he's not a world beater by any stretch of the imagination, but it sure would, on paper, at least make the depth of that outside linebacker position look a little bit better.
Yeah, I think he's just a better version of Chick. I think he has the play strength that Chick needs to play with. I think he has the violence in his hands. I think he has the power. I think those are things that I didn't see with Chick. And it was disappointing because I like Chicolo, because, he's kind of done it all for Pittsburgh. He's had to, transform his body from a 275-pound defensive end at Miami playing 5-tech to playing outside linebacker. He's had to play special teams. He's had to play both outside linebacker spots. He's had to learn how to play the run. I mean, so he's made a lot of strides in his career, probably further than most would have thought he would have gone. But I just don't see really much as a pass rusher. And the other thing, and I started to do a study on this, numbers, didn't come out super clear, but the Steelers like to use him as a rush defensive end with put his hand down, which they've done a little bit more with guys lately, but especially Chick, because I guess his background in college. But if you look at his sack rate and his pressure rate, they're better at outside linebacker with his hand up than it is with his hand down. They're lower when he's playing defensive end. So that's another change I'd like to see them make a little bit, play him less with his hand down, more with his hand up, because the results have just been better playing outside linebacker than they are defensive end.
All right, good point. Before we'll wrap up with this, you're doing a series right now trying to fill the dead time in, talking about one-hit wonders for the Steelers. And, boy, Dallas Baker brought back some memories when you wrote about him this past week and all. Seemed like every year this is going to be Dallas Baker was the original Marcus Tucker, maybe. I don't know. But just see him and Walter. Remember Walter Young?
He's going to be on my list. I have the GIF. I have found the clip of him making a catch against Cleveland, his only catch.
All right. So that was another one. It seemed like for a couple offseason,
He was around for like ever, just as a practice squad guy.
Yeah, it was like him, and then Dallas Baker, and then the guy that you wrote about this morning, Tyler Grisham, was another one. It just seemed like a couple of offseason. Oh, okay, Grisham. Look, he was probably the offensive version of maybe Ross Ventrone, right? A guy that
he didn't get cut like Ventrone.
He didn't get cut like him, but he's a guy that, man, you couldn't help but root for, right? And didn't his lone reception come late in the season against the Ravens?
Yep, I read about it today. It was 2009, his rookie year, middle of the fourth quarter against Baltimore. It was like week 16. It was Steelers were trying to come back into the playoff race, and Grisham caught the ball and moved the sticks on third down. Dropped the second pass, actually, but his catch extended the drive, gave the Steelers the eventual game-winning field goal. So that was kind of a cool moment. But, yeah, I just remember Grisham being called like Wes Welker because he was short and white, and that's what you were back in 2009 if you were a short white guy. So, you know, it was just weird expectations. But, yeah, it's fun to look at these guys, kind of take the stroll down memory lane. Dave, the first guy I did in this series a couple days ago, Dante Brown. Do you remember that guy at all? I did not remember who he was.
Yeah, I remember the name, and I remember a little bit of buzz about him and all. What year was he?
He came in 2003, played in 2004.
Okay, yeah, it was around the Willie Parker time.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, there was some buzz. The more I learned about him, there was legit buzz. He had some good preseasons with Pittsburgh.
You know, I tell you, going through watching all this Oklahoma State tape that I've been, I'm sort of become an Oklahoma State fan. I know these guys so well now, and I can't remember Stoner. He was an underclassman, right? This wasn't the year that he came out, was it?
Who are you talking about?
Dylan Stoner, one of their wide receivers there. He was a redshirt.
I don't know the name, so he's probably underclassman.
Yeah, he was a freshman in 2016, so a sophomore. He is a guy I think when you talk about Wes Welker like wide receivers, keep an eye on that kid at Oklahoma State moving forward. Aitman, who ended up with the Raiders, man, the more. I think Aitman was a seventh-round pick of the Raiders this year. That guy has some kind of – I don't know if Keenan Allen might be a kind of a poor man's Keenan Allen might be a comparison for Aitman. But, man, that guy made a lot of plays. And, you know, I think we talked on the last show, he didn't run all that great and measurables. But when it came to making plays, Aitman made some plays last year for Oklahoma State. Obviously, you know, we all know about James Washington. Their running back there, Justice Hill, I think.
Yeah, he's really good.
He is going to be a fun player, I think, to watch. I'm trying to figure out what year. He was a sophomore last year, I think. So he is a guy undersized. Obviously not going to be a top round guy, but when you talk about kind of all purpose guys that can do it all, Justice Hill is going to be a guy to watch, a guy that I've, you know, kind of taken a shine to. Another wide receiver, Lacey over there. McCluskey is another one. I could go down. I mean, I've watched so much every.
You're the offensive coordinator,
right?
Now,
right. I mean, a lot of these guys. The only thing that's going to make I think that makes this fun for me now is, you know, normally coming out of every college season, getting into draft season and all like that, I'm way behind, you know, for obvious reasons. Well, thing about a lot of these kids now from watching all this tape is, boy, I got a good understanding about who a lot of these kids are on offense for them, and it'll make it a little bit, you know, I'll be able to watch Oklahoma State games next year during the regular season and say, oh, yeah, I know that kid. And like I said, I've sort of become a little bit of a fan. Did you see the clip that I put up yesterday on Twitter of Mason Rudolph blocking?
No, I wanted to see it. It was on my phone. So, what do you have? Legitimately good block?
No, he had the A for effort, and he put the defensive end on his butt when all was said and done. So, not often that you see a quarterback be able to do that. I was on one of those funky end arounds, you know.
Something Ben would do.
Yeah, one of those end arounds where he tossed it to, I think he tossed it to Washington, and Washington reverse coming back the other way. I think it ended up losing 9 yards, but it wasn't a result. I don't think it was a result of Mason Rudolph not having effort on the play there, but I couldn't believe my eyes of going back through that and watching that. So if you got a moment and you're listening to this podcast, go to my Twitter feed and it'll take you right to that clip of Mason Rudolph having a block there. But I'm starting to wind down that series there. of Mason Rudolph contextualizing every one of his throws from last season. He went through a couple of games, tough stretch there with West Virginia and Texas, where he didn't light the world on fire. Had a good an overall good game against Iowa State, and I think that's the next one I'm going to be posting up today on Steelers Depot as well. I'll write about Le'Veon Bell, a few other things that he had to say during his interview on NFL Network last night. So in the meantime, and Alex, go ahead and be prepared to be back with me on Friday. I think David Todd's going back to New York City this weekend as well. So unless you got anything else, Alex, in the meantime, folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Kozura at Alex_Kozura. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button up right navigational bar. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.